Values are like fingerprints. Nobody's are the same, but if you leave them all over everything you do. That was an Elvis quote. Happy birthday to Elvis. He would have been 88 today if he hadn't eaten quite so many hamburgers. Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the Same Old Wombles. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us who put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated, non-partisan, and entirely unofficial. We're the Same Old Wombles. My name is Mark Lewis, and I'm finally free of the flu that's been afflicting my family and most of the UK over the last fortnight. Joining me on tonight's panel, we have a welcome return for Alex Folks, Adam Proctor, and Matthew Cooper. On tonight's show, we'll discuss the progress of the transfer window for the club so far, a quick review of the board draw at Crewe, a welcome return of Rant of the Week, and we're going to be discussing who we think are our favourite players to join the Don's Trust Hall of Fame, which will be discussed and put out to public votes, I believe, in a few weeks' time. And we're going to be looking at the decade from 2011 onwards. And of course, we'll have some numbers as well. Welcome to episode 20.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Did you Google all the Elvis quotes? Because I just think there's a lot better ones you could have gone with.
Oh, they're far better.
They would have been much more relevant to our thing. I mean, it was just the first one that came up.
I literally put in 20 Elvis quotes, and that's what I came up with. There were some other really boring ones about like what happens when you're in the army and stuff. But you know,
that sounds interesting.
I don't believe that's an Elvis quote. That's the thing. I just think that's like totally not attributable to him. It just doesn't sound like Elvis. It doesn't sound cool enough.
It's too eloquent, isn't it? Yeah.
But if it was interesting, it wouldn't have any place in the Same Old Wombles podcast.
Of course, absolutely not.
Yeah, good point.
I wouldn't do anything long like that, you know. I'll tell you what is interesting, though. What is interesting is when you're on about six different WhatsApp groups, all of which are different types of AFC Wimbledon fans, and you try and work out when you get some type of rumour that is on some spurious website, which thing you dare to actually pass on, which thing you should completely and utterly not believe, or which thing you pass on and say, I'm not believing this, am I?
Well, I'm only on two, and it contains the same people, basically, and that's confusing enough as it is.
Yeah, but one of them's got Drake on it, and one of them hasn't. So, you know, you just disbelieve anything that Martin says.
Mark, any rumour would be nice to know, because at the moment there just doesn't seem to be anything apart from the very false Niall Taylor rumour.
Yeah, that was harsh. That was really harsh that even someone decided to put that out there just to see how many people would believe him. And I fell for it hook, line and sinker.
Where's he playing now then?
Nowhere. Allegedly his contract's going to be cancelled and then he can sign for whoever, but I don't know. So in the last week, we've lost Hudlin, which we kind of expected. We've lost Magoma, which clearly nobody, including the manager, expected. And we've lost Towler, and we've been shafted by Portsmouth again. Although all they've done is just scout our games quite well and work out how cheaply they can get away with acquiring a player. And I'm not going to steal Alex's thunder, because Alex is going to talk about the loan thing later on. But yeah. It's frustrating in the extreme. Someone else gone back that I've missed out on? I thought we'd lost four.
No, just the three.
Just the three.
That we know about. It could be more. Look, I'm going to do the rant now. Why not?
Do the rant now. Go for it.
It's about this subject. It's about loans. It's about how at the start of the season, we got these three players in on loan and they were all declared to be season-long loans. And you get to the beginning of January and suddenly all three of them have gone, and we can look at it and we can think, well, Hudlin, we're not too worried about that. He wasn't the best player. Maybe he's coming into a bit of form now, but allegedly we have to pay Huddersfield every time he doesn't make it onto the pitch. And so, you know, the manager's hand was forced a bit, if that's the case. So no big loss there. You know, Magoma, by and large, I think is a fairly decent player. He still has fits and starts, but then so do all players. So we'd quite like to have kept him. Riley Towler is a huge loss. Our central defence suddenly fell apart because we don't have him and PK there. Will isn't fit, and I don't think, with the best wishes to Will Nightingale, he's not quite as good as Riley Towler. So the club has been decimated by losing those three players right at the start of January with almost no warning. And that puts us into an impossible position when we have to name a squad to go and play at Crewe at the weekend. And everybody was commenting on it, saying this is the worst Wimbledon team we've seen in ages on paper. And credit to them, they got a draw out of it. Would we have won if we'd had those players? Would we have won if we had Woody and DeSalle fit as well? I think quite possibly, yes. It would certainly have been a more exciting game for those poor sods who had to go up there and watch it. But it's the system that annoys me, that, yeah, nobody did anything illegal or wrong. This was all written into the contracts. But if you have a club in League Two especially, that relies on players who come in on loan, if you have a club with a minuscule budget and not that many players, to lose three key players just at the drop of a hat with no warning whatsoever is devastating. And we got away with it against Crewe. I think a draw is fine. We won't necessarily get away with it until we can replace them. We've brought back two strikers of our own who were out on loan. Is that spite? Have we done that out of spite? I don't know. You can see Robinson being a useful player off the bench. I'm not entirely sure why Cosgrave is back. I didn't rate him. I don't think he's that good a player. Maybe he could have developed further on loan, but equally, maybe it wasn't our choice to get him back. Maybe the club that took him from us said, actually, thanks, but no thanks. So, yeah, I think there needs to be a better situation for loans. I think that the parent club, of course, if they've got an injury crisis, of course, they should be able to recall those players. But I think there needs to be maybe a notice period, a 1 week or a 2 week notice period, so that the club that has them on loan, us in this case, has a bit of leeway and can try and do something to make sure we don't have a squad that's ripped apart at the seams at the, you know, at the drop of a hat. Just something to be a bit fairer to the lower club. You know, that should apply to us, of course, as well. But, you know, people say to us, this proves that we're quite a good club for receiving these loan players, because clearly we develop them and they are getting better footballers. And I think the Riley Towler situation is definitely one of those. He was clearly a star for us. Portsmouth want him. Portsmouth haven't done anything wrong. They've managed to get hold of a decent young player who I would love to hope that we put in a bid for ourselves. Maybe we got outbid. That's fair enough. We're a League Two club. They're a League One club as well. That's going to make a difference. But, you know, he's a young player who's proved himself at our level. Sure, he might have injuries in the future, but every player does. He could be part of our long-term plans if we've managed to keep hold of him. But, you know, it wasn't to be. But fair enough to Bristol City, fair enough to Portsmouth. They didn't do anything wrong. But I just think that the system is a bit unfair on the lower league clubs. Anyway, that's the rant. I think a huge number of people have probably thought the same thing. I just wanted to get it out of my system.
Cheers, Alex. I mean, for me, I think the things that make sense are definitely there needs to be a period of notice. If you're going to take someone back, there needs to be a period of notice. You know, one or 2 weeks, there needs to be a period of notice. But I also think now that it should be agreed that loans are only half season. So only say that they're a half season loan. So we don't go into this point, because just before Christmas, everyone was saying Tyler and Magoma were going to be there for the season. Hudding we thought might go back, but everyone thought that Tyler and Magoma were there for the whole season. So that is That's really frustrating. So only say that they're half season loans, and we can deal with it. We can go, okay, fine. And then maybe in January they can be extended for the for another 6 months or however long it is. But don't make them, because it's just the title bomb is so frustrating. That's really, I mean, that's really blowing us out of the water. And I would say probably out of, for the squad for crew, we were really losing three first teamers, and not through the loans, but we lost Woody, we lost Asau, we lost Tyler. That's three key players. And if Magoma had been fit, that would have been four. That's four players we were missing, and of which two were loans. So it makes a huge difference to us. And it's going to be a real struggle for us to get players in, because everyone is looking to improve their squads in one way or another. Whether you're near the bottom or battling near the top, everyone is trying to improve their squad. So it's going to be a real challenge, and particularly to get people in before the Bradford game. I'm you know, like all of us, always, you know, refreshing to see if anything's come in. And I just think it's going to be a real challenge for us to get someone in before Bradford. So we're going to be stuck with a situation, unless we can get Woody and Asau back, that would improve things. But it's going to be really difficult against Bradford.
Yeah. No, I think that's totally... I think, did they not say that Asau was maybe over the sickness or whatever? So maybe he will be available. I don't know. Obviously, he won't be fully fit, so that's an issue. But yeah, the Bradford game, it's like they've got one of the biggest away like followings, haven't they, and whatever. So it's quite a big game in for lots of reasons. It's a bit of a shame that we're going to be a bit blunted. But yeah, I mean, I know these rants we aren't really supposed to respond directly to in that sense, but I totally agree. Notice period. Like, what the heck? Why is there no notice period? It doesn't make any sense. Like, every other job, no matter what you're doing, you have like a period of notice, even if it's like a small period. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, the Towler thing is a mess. That's like stressed me out, just because there's so many like saves off the line in the last few games and stuff. Like, what the heck? And again, I thought we didn't need to worry about our defence. I was worrying about other things, and now I'm worrying about the defence again. Ridiculous. Annoying.
The thing is, none of us disagree with the rant, so well said to all of you. I just had a quick look in the past programme, and Magoma and Riley and Asau all played in the reverse fixture against Crewe at home, when we should have won, but Davis missed the penalty. It's the game before Woodyard came back from injury, but everyone else played in there. So, yeah, we played better in that game. And Alex is right. You would imagine that with those players together, we would have done that much better.
Well, that game was pretty dull, to be honest.
Yeah, but we should have won it. We were more.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It definitely was the way that we played was changed because of those changes. And so the game was pretty dull.
I got the impression, looking at and listening to Jackson's post-match interview from Saturday, that he played the team that he had the personnel for. Not that he wanted to play, not that he really thought was necessarily the best setup, but actually the team that he could do. So actually, would any of us have been surprised if we'd lost 2-0 in a typical Wimbledon Northwest performance? No, not at all. But, you know, in that respect, we got away with it. But actually, just to add to Alex's point about the whole loan thing, I think, generally speaking, a load of teams are being shafted like this. I noticed a thing today where a striker called Nathan Broadhead, who apparently is like on the fringes of the Everton first team, never ever played for them, been on loan around the Championship a few times. He was on loan at Wigan, who are struggling lower reaches of the Championship. And he scored a few goals for them this season. And Ipswich were sniffing around, as Ipswich are obviously pushing big time and have got some backers or got some finance. So they put in a bid of up to like £1.5 million, which sounds like a huge amount of money for that level of striker. So he's immediately been recalled from Wigan. Wigan have lost out. Everton get some cash, which they can put towards desperate stakes in the Premier League. And the kid goes on and ends up being first team in League One, and obviously Ipswich imagine that he'll be in the Championship with them next season. So unfortunately, it's happening all the way through. Same things going on with a striker that Mansfield have, who for some random reason was on loan at Walsall and has scored 15 goals for Walsall, and allegedly Colchester, because they're splashing cash from God knows where. Colchester have put in a bid for him of over $100,000. Where have these people got this money from? I'm not quite sure. And it's only Crawley that are sending their best players to other relegation candidates. So I'm quite happy, actually, if Colchester is strengthened, because we played them twice already and we beat them twice already. So they can quite happily beat everyone else around us. I don't really mind about that. But yeah, I think Matt's point about half-season loans makes a lot of sense, because it happened to us with Matt Tubbs, and he went to Portsmouth. Michael Smith, and he went, I believe, to Swindon. It's almost like the higher club is not putting the player out there to gain experience. They're putting the player out there who no one has actually heard of. No one had heard of Paris from Goma. No one had heard of Rosella. And then they're actually putting them out there to put them in the shop window. They have no intention of putting them in their own first team. But and 6 months ago, Riley Talley had never played league football. All of a sudden, he's worth over $100,000, allegedly, to Bristol City as a selling club. Frustration in the extreme.
I'm just going to put one caveat in for my notice period. I do think a notice period is sensible. The only caveat I would make is for goalkeepers where you have a goalkeeping crisis. We have heard about clubs who only have two keepers. One of them gets injured. You desperately need another keeper back. You've got one on loan. That can be done at the drop of a hat. I get that. But there needs to be some sort of certification, like with the signing an emergency keeper outside the window and so on. I just wanted to throw that out there for the pedants out there. But yeah. But anyway, thank you very much for the positive feedback on the rant. But somebody needs to get it sorted. I'll look to the EFL and won't hold my breath.
No. I mean, I generally think that's going to come down to the clubs, or our club in particular, just for us to say, okay, we understand that this is a 6 month or a half season loan, and that's just as we understand it. So, and maybe it's us for supporters to go, okay, we now know that it's only going to be a half season loan, and if it gets extended, brilliant. But we don't put our faith in that. But it's talking about keepers, Alex. That's another thing that has been a cause of frustration. Is another one of our young keepers has gone, is going to a Premier League side. I can't remember the kid's name. He's like an under 16 player, so we've got these great keepers. So, Mark, you know,
if he is the under 16 kid, then it's Spike Britt, who played for England under 16. If I was Ashley Bayes, his goalkeeping coach, I'd be tearing my hair out, because that's like the fourth keeper in a row. Mannion, Bursic, now Britz, and Matthew Cox as well. All of them have played England under 16, 17, 18, depending on their age. None of them have ever been closer than being on the bench for us. And I actually know Spike Britz's mum through my own mum. They live in Wimbledon. And I know how proud she was. She's not into sport, her husband is. But I know how proud she was about the fact he's been there since he was about 7 or 8. And he was a mascot, you know, back in the Ryman days and everything else. And all that's happened is that you've got scouts who are watching every youth team game going. And obviously they've got the networks that lower league clubs don't have. And they looked at this kid and thought, okay, you know, he's 15, 16, he's 6 foot or whatever. And therefore, fine, we can snap him up. We probably at that age don't have to pay us a huge amount of money. We couldn't sign him on a professional contract because you can't sign him until they're 17. So we'll get something for him. Exactly the same thing happened with Patrick Roberts. Everyone forgets about this, but Patrick Roberts was a Wimbledon player. And then he went to somewhere else, and then he ended up at Man City via Celtic, and he's now back in the Championship, I believe. But it's a completely airbrushed from history that he was ever a Wimbledon player, and he actually came through our academy first.
But I thought we'd agreed some sort of clause related to the amount of money and time we put into our academy players in terms of when they can and can't leave. I thought that was something that was agreed a few seasons ago, so that we wouldn't have these kind of issues, that there was some loyalty embedded in that, because there was concerns that we were spending like all of our money, you know, and time on developing players, and then they just get nicked, you know, they just get poached by obviously Premier League clubs and whatever. And the other thing is, let's not worry too much about the goalies. Let's worry about the goalkeeping coach. Like, if he's doing this well with these kind of goalies, we might need to figure out how to pay him some more money, because that might be a bigger issue if suddenly a very good coach leaves. But I don't know. Do anyone remember that thing about the clause? There was some sort of clause about the academy players, I thought.
Well, there is a template, a national rule about compensation to the developing club, and when you can sign people and so on. And that's what tends to get in the headlines for some clubs. And I'm not talking about British clubs here. I'm talking about mostly foreign clubs, which illegally sign players under a certain age or poach them with inducements, jobs to their family and so on, which has had a few court cases about it. I'm not aware of the details. I wouldn't pretend to, but there is a rule as to what happens with it. We will get money for any player that we developed at academy level or below at some point down the line. It may not be very much, I don't know, but that's sort of written in automatically. We don't need to have a contract that says that there will be these automatic payments, but you know, that means something to us. But you know, the question is, you know, at what stage do we want to be able to hang on to these players, or are we happy to let them go? And you know, say if you can play at a championship or a prem club or Scottish Premiership, brilliant, well done, go on, do it, make the best career you can.
It's a difficult one either way. I mean, the one potential exception to the rule might be Leo Castledine, Duett's son, because I understand that the contract that was signed by Chelsea is quite lucrative for us. But again, only if he plays first team games, if he plays England games and so on. And also if he doesn't necessarily make that breakthrough and he's at Chelsea, so what opportunity is there ever going to be? Because there'll be 15 different Chelsea managers between now and next Christmas, for him to actually make the breakthrough into the first team. You know, Potter played a couple of youngsters last night and they got thumped by Man City, didn't they? So, yeah, frustrating in the extreme. Or does he end up being another Patrick Roberts and everyone forgets about it? Because, I mean, Mannion and Bersic have both made decent careers. Bersic's playing for Stoke, I believe. Mannion's playing for Cambridge now. Again, professional careers, but not necessarily at the highest level. But in terms of, we have actually done some business, obviously. We've got Zach Robinson back. Fingers crossed he'll get a chance now, because I thought he was okay last year in the cluster, what's it, that was League One football for us. And we've got Sam Pearson on the right wing. And again, no one had ever heard of. I've scoured the internet like everyone else, and he looks all right. He looks like a decent, fast right winger that will go past his man, unlike Courtney Senior. So you imagine that Courtney Senior will be quietly forgotten about.
That's a little unfair, Mark. Come on, I like Senior. I just don't think he's had the position yet.
We've just signed him to a new contract as well. So, you know, if we were thinking that he's going to be quietly forgotten about, it's a more expensive forgetting about than anything else. You know, I don't want to say ill of the guy, because I haven't seen him play very much. He's been ish when I have seen him. But, you know, surely if we have signed him to a new contract, we must think he's got something that makes him worth playing. Hopefully we haven't just signed him to a new contract because we were desperately casting around as we were losing all our players. I'm sure we're a bit better than that.
I don't think so.
No, I reckon he's got loads of potential. I think he's got loads of potential.
Yeah, but you thought Nestor Guinness Walker was the best player.
We can't trust you, Adam. We genuinely can't trust you. Your understanding of football comes from a different world.
I think that Adam just goes for the player who's playing nearest to where he's sitting in the stadium.
Anyhow, this Courtney's with us for a month, isn't he? But he's been, and I'm sure that might have been a reaction to Asal.
Yeah, the saddest thing, unfortunately, is that since Sal was ill and appears to be genuinely ill, and he's now apparently back in the building, so Jackson said anyway, so therefore he hopefully will train this week. But since he's been ill, we've had three games. We've had Sutton. We've had Crewe away, and another game I've already forgotten because it was that memorable. And we've scored one goal and a couple of draws, so and a defeat. And you know, it's not all that really, as they say. We also haven't managed to assimilate NYC back into the team as well, because he was the best thing since sliced bread, another positive loanee. But we don't quite know the formation that we stumbled on when he got injured in the first place. Now we're playing that formation more often than not. It works with Pell in there, it works with Woodyard in there, but it doesn't seem to accommodate NYC properly. And as a result of that, without a Sal in the team, we are pretty low in the creative stakes, and therefore the chances of actually creating chances, let alone scoring goals, let alone winning games, right now doesn't seem to be anything like high enough.
No, well, the good thing was NYC came on a bit earlier on the weekend games, 66 minutes. So that was good, I thought. I quite liked the fact that we were actually substituting someone before like 80 plus minutes. But then, of course, Robinson came on in the 85th minute or 86th minute or something ridiculous. I don't even see how you can do anything. Like, you know, as much as warming up as you can do on the side, you're literally 5 minutes of warming up on the pitch. It's ridiculous. I just don't get these late substitutions at all, to be honest. It's just too late.
Yeah, I'd agree 100% on the late substitutions. The only thing about Robinson is, if I understand it right, he literally travelled from Dundee down, met the team in Crewe, and therefore probably didn't know the names of some of the new players. So that's why it would have only made sense to assimilate him new into the team. But I'd like to start Pearson. Pearson looks fresh, new, lively, and Welsh. So up the Welsh. We like that. We need some impetus because, I mean, Bradford are going to be in our faces. They're going to be big. They're going to be physical. They're going to be a typical League Two team. We've got, you know, we've got a number of games now between now and the end of January. Even if we do get anyone in this week, you've got to assimilate them pretty quickly. We've got Bradford. Then we've got Newport away without Idlin, obviously. So hopefully that won't be quite such a needle game. Then we've got Walsall, who hopefully would have lost their main striker, and they'll be distracted by the fact that they've got through to the fourth round of the FA Cup. And then we've got Stockport, which looks like it's sold out already, and Stockport are doing pretty well themselves also from a playoff point of view. So four games to go in January, and we definitely desperately need some reinforcements.
Just to pick up on the Stockport thing, you say it looks like it's sold out already. The club's advertising it as the footy for a fiver match still. So I'd assume there's some tickets left if they're still being sold for a fiver. Don't get me wrong, I think that's a fantastic initiative. The idea, you know, that Stockport probably isn't going to bring a large away contingent, therefore we can sell a few more tickets of our own, try and get new people in. That's great. When it was advertised, when it was first talked about, it was said, look, we recognise this isn't providing any sort of saving to season ticket holders, which is fine, it can't do, so be it. But there'll be an offer for season ticket holders at some point. Does anybody know what that offer is going to be, either for the Stockport match or presumably for another match later in the season?
No idea. I don't think they've said, to be honest.
Okay. Well, hopefully nobody's forgetting about it, because don't get me wrong, the footy for a fiver is a good thing, but I think that season ticket holders are going to look at that and say, well, actually, that's some money that I'm not saving. I'm putting into every game in this club. Give me a little something, please.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even know there was a thing actually until you said it. So I'm waiting in anticipation for something.
He's excited. Two things on that. First of all, my understanding was that it was a fiver for every seat that was available that wasn't obviously a season ticket already. And the reason I know there aren't many seats left is because I tried to get some seats for some work colleagues of mine. There were four that I got, and I couldn't find a four anywhere else in the whole stadium apart from the far side of the east stand near where the away fans sit by the scoreboard, which is fine. So I got that, and that was before Christmas actually when I got that. So I don't know how many are left now. The other thing is, I saw what Colchester did for the away game we played there around Christmas, where basically they set their prices at a certain level, and it's a bit EasyJet style. The closer you get to the, or reverse of EasyJet, sorry, the closer you get to the game, the higher the ticket price gets. So if the game is in March and you buy a ticket now, if the tickets are available, it might cost you 15 quid. If you buy it in February, it might cost you 17 quid. If you buy it on the day, it might cost you 22. I'm just picking random numbers. But that's what Colchester did. Well, yeah, I agree. But I actually directly messaged Danny Macklin on Twitter, look at me, engaging with the club, to say, is this a good idea? Why don't we try something like this? You know, just to not to pick holes or whatever, or to, you know, start a Twitter spat, but just because I was interested. And to be fair, he came straight back to me and said, no, he didn't think that was necessarily the right idea, but they wanted to do a universal idea of pricing overall, which obviously is what the Stockport opportunity is, but there would be additional incentives for season tickets, as Alex mentioned. So don't know where it is. One for the Don's Trust board, possibly.
Wow, but you're on the Don's Trust board and you've already been slammed by Daddy Macklin. He's not listening to anything you have to say. Whoa.
That was me as a personal fan asking that.
Yeah. The dynamic pricing thing, the Colchester thing that you just mentioned, is, I mean, you say it's an EasyJet style. Yeah, it's something that businesses like airlines and hotels use all the time. They've got a model that predicts it very well, but they've developed that over many years. It's something where something like a football club, which isn't used to using it, can lose a heck of a lot of money each game while they try to get it right. Yeah, maybe it's something that will come in the future. It does smack to me a little bit like scalpers tickets. And if you are a genuine fan who doesn't know if they're going to be able to go until the last minute, then you could end up paying more and being penalised simply because your life is a bit more complicated than somebody who can afford to book 6 months in advance or whatever. It also relies on the club being able to put tickets out on sale quite far in advance, and that can be quite difficult for a small club with a small staff. So, you know, there's going to be a number of factors. Maybe it'll be something that could happen in the future, but I'm not sure that we ought to be jumping at it quite yet. I don't think it's going to make us a heck of a lot more money that quickly, and the potential to lose money is probably quite high.
Yeah, I quite like it the other way around, that it got cheaper the nearer you got, so that you'd have the random, oh, I think I'm going to go. I mean, the other thing I wonder, I know that we're sort of talking around, we're going off in a different direction, but is, like, what is the walk-in traffic like for us? Because I don't really know that part of Wimbledon very well at all. But I do wonder whether, you know, we could do something with that, where you just capture people on the day who kind of think, oh, I wouldn't mind watching a bit of football. I guess it's League Two, so it's not the same draw as the random walk into a Premier League game or whatever, but it's got to be some, I don't know, I quite like that.
I think the whole thing's interesting. I mean, I'm interested in why they picked Stockport, because I think they bring a lot of fans. So it's interesting why we would pick Stockport as a game rather than anyone else. And I guess, Adam, I think the problem with having it the reverse way, you know, like the cheaper it gets, the closer it gets to the game, the cheaper it becomes, is it just means that people aren't buying in advance. So you don't know what your tickets are going to be in advance. And, you know, you could be turning people off, people thinking, oh, yeah, I am going to go along, and they don't. So I think probably you do need to do it cheaper. And if you're going to do anything, do it cheaper in advance so you've got the money in the bank, is the way you do it.
No, fair enough. That makes sense, actually. I guess the Stockport thing might have been to do with, like, same as the Bradford thing, is that the more away fans there are, the more of an atmosphere there'll be, the more likely you'll return, potentially.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I suspect it's as simple as the Stockport game happened to be the end of January. And after Christmas, people have credit card bills, people have heating bills and whatever else. What are the different priorities?
Yeah, it's the wrong day at the end of January, though, isn't it? Because I'm literally paid like 3 days later. I was like, oh, come on, January is killing me.
January kills everybody that gets paid a week early at Christmas and then they have to make it straight for 5 weeks.
It's so bad.
To answer Matt's question, Stockport are second in the average away following in the whole of League Two. So in 12 away games, before last weekend, their average away following was 965, second only to Bradford, 969. So fingers crossed, Bradford will bring quite a few. The lowest Bradford have taken all season is 467. So that's pretty good.
You do like your numbers, don't you, Mark?
I do subscribe to too many different Twitter pages that have numbers on them. Right, moving across from numbers, I'm going to move us along to the Donstrass Hall of Fame. There are a number of people put themselves forward for this, and a number of people have been nominated as fans, who've been fans for years and decades and so on. So there's a group meeting virtually later this week. Fortunately or unfortunately for me, I've been nominated as the Donstrass board rep for that. And they've been asked to nominate their favourite 10 players from a number of different eras. The eras are usually 10 years or so, starting from post-war and moving on. And the idea is that then out of that, it's going to be whittled down to be able to identify a number, and Niall will know more about this because it's his pet project, a number of players, and then images of those players are actually going to be reproduced at the stadium. But I'll let Niall talk about that in more detail and more accuracy at a later date. However,
That's perfectly accurate. You don't just get Niall involved in these shenanigans.
Quite right too. That was his brother speaking, by the way. So what we're going to do tonight is I'm going to give you guys a bunch of names from 2011 onwards, 2011 to the current day. And then out of that, we the four of us, can actually come up with our faves, our 10 favourites out of this list. Aaron Ramsdale, Alan Bennett, Andy Bartram, Ashley Hinks, Ayuba Sale, Barry Fuller, Bayo Akinfenwa, Danny Bullman, Darius Charles, Ethan Chislett, Jack Midson, Jack Redoni, Jake Reeves, James Shea, Joe Piggott, John Meads, Lyle Taylor, baby, Nesta Guinness-Walker, some bloke called Palmer, Ollie Palmer, apparently, not Joe, Paul Callanby, Paul Robinson, Seb Brown, Tom Elliott, and Will Nightingale. That's the list. That is the list, as I understand, of the individual contributors to this group. And each of them has been able to, obviously, contribute their own preferences, hence the fact that some random ones are in there, like Nesta.
Mark, when's this from? What year is it? What's the year
2011
from?
2011 onwards.
Okay, because there's someone who was apparently with us in 2011. It isn't on this list. Danny Kedwell. But yeah. I guess he's on the list for the previous 10 years.
Yeah, that's right. There were a few, and Dave Besant is one in previous eras that he's on in one particular area, but then he spans over two decades. Out of that, Aaron Ramsdale, James Shea. Okay, I'll start then. It's easy. I'm going with Paul Robinson.
Why?
Why? Because he's probably the classiest defender we've ever had, even though he was at the end of his career. And from a character, not on and off the field, he was the quintessential player you want.
All right, sure. I'd go with Bartram, actually, as my first one, because I just thought he was excellent. I don't think we had him long enough, and I just thought he was a fantastic player.
We do discount everything Adam says, yeah. You're just gesturing, saying, open up your arms and heart. Let me in. You must be out of your brilliant mind. Must be out of your brilliant mind. I'm going to chuck in Ashley Hinks.
That's a good shout. You know, that's a good shout.
Pretty much, she's like the club player of the year last year. Is banging in goals for fun.
I'm going to be totally uncontroversial and go with Aaron Ramsdale. Only with us for a very short period of time, but absolutely turned the season around, kept us in the league, and was such and is such a huge personality
that he absolutely inspired the team. A club which has a slightly dodgy record on some of its keepers, certainly on our defenders, and he was just there, and he produced the saves. He led the defensive line. He inspired the fans, and he's somebody who makes me like Arsenal now, and that takes some doing. So yeah, I'll go with him.
It's a very good shout. I must admit, I have been following Arsenal since Ramsdale went there as well, and he's in my fantasy league team. So yeah, good shout indeed. Okay, I'm going to follow that up with a player who was a captain, who was again an inspiration on and off the field, who seemed like a very genuine, decent bloke. Although one of his daughters is in the Chelsea Academy, but I don't suppose he can help that. And year in, year out, despite his diminutive stature, was the kind of person that would, you felt like he'd run through brick walls for you. And even now, 4 or 5 years later, after he's left the club, you know, my wife still talks about him and talks about wanting to have that kind of player in our team overall. And that is Barry Friller.
Good call. I mean, he is a really, really good player, but also a leader. And I think that sort of thing makes a difference.
That was great. Mark, you actually introduced that like you're on club call. You did like 5 minutes before you actually got to the bit of information. I like it.
That's a good shout for Fuller. I had him on my list as well. I'm going to keep away from NGW for now. I'm going to say Darius Charles, because I just thought he was such a nice guy. Like, in lots of ways. I can't remember which away game, probably one we went to, whichever away game. He was in the bar with his wife or whatever. Just like, that was Hampton Richmond, must have been. Yeah, by the river. Oh, so, you know, and obviously being vegan, that's a extra bonus. But also came back and did some work with the young players, which I thought was great. So, yeah, I think all round, nice guy. Enjoyed him when he played. Yeah, I'm always up for the nice people.
I'm going to go for Lyle Taylor, baby. I just think he's got to be on it, just for his hair, if nothing else. And his goal, I mean, he was very passionate, wasn't he? He was very passionate about what it was. I remember when he was playing for Charlton against us, and they slaughtered us, I think. And he was furious with our players for not showing any passion. So I, you know, that sort of thing. And he rocks up every now and again, and he scored some great goals for us. He was a good player. And if Chris Phillips listens, and I know he doesn't, but if he did, it would piss him off as well, because he really doesn't like him.
But you look at Lyle Taylor, and for everything that Adam has just said about Darius Charles, perhaps in some way the opposite is true for Lyle Taylor. That's not to diss the guy as an exceptional player and a personality, but he's one of those players who's much more, and perhaps like Bayerak and Fenner as well, he's much more in it for himself than he is for bonding the team. He's a different type of personality, and both are needed in football. And as I say, I'm not dissing the guy, because he's a brilliant player, and I would love to have had him back if that rumour had been true. But he's a different type of character. I'm not going to go for Bayo Akinfenwa, because I thought what he did at the playoff, nicking the penalty, taking, because it was his last game. Well, it was, you know, the other guy's last game as well. So no, I don't think he's the sort of player who exemplifies the club. I think he exemplifies himself. And he's much further along that line than Lyle Taylor is. No, my second player, and the other one I'm going to pick, is going to be Jack Redoni. I think he was an exceptional talent. I think he still is an exceptional talent. I hope he makes it in the big time. But I thought he was one of the first players who we developed through our own academy who came through and really starred. And didn't get sent out on loan, didn't get shuffled into the reserves the whole time or coming off the bench for the last 5 minutes. I thought he really took to it straight away, starred, and really made a connection, especially with the younger fans. So For me, he is somebody who really should be up there and should be shouted about by us, if for no other reason than when he makes it really big, nobody is allowed to forget the fact that he started off with us.
Quite a way too, and actually he was going to be my final choice. So we've done eight, which means we've only got two left to do, which means we have to agree on the last two between us. So I'm going to throw you out two names, and then people can say whether or not they agree with any of these or not. And then we'll agree on the last two between us, just as a bit of fun, as we said. So my last two are going to be John Meads, because he was just one of those solid players. Was he the world's best player? Absolutely not. Did he maximise absolutely everything he could? Yes. Would he have been in the first team for a long time, either left back or right back? For sure. Have you really struggled until this season to actually come up with dependable left backs that were solid all the time since him? 100%. And the other one, which is probably less controversial, is Will Nightingale. Again, not the greatest player, never going to be the greatest player. Certainly, unfortunately, injury-wise, is always hampered in that particular regard. But in terms of supporting the club, supporting the local community, doing the club events, doing the foundation events and so on and so forth, definitely up there with everybody in terms, certainly for younger fans, I would have thought, as one of their absolute idols.
I can take the Will Nightingale one very easily. I think for the reasons you give, he is a club legend. As you say, he's not the best player and the injuries have not helped, but as somebody who you want out there representing the club, he is very high up there. But the second name I'm going to take is actually one who I think is probably going to be in the next decade and deserve to be in the next decade. And that's Ethan Chislett, who I thought wasn't the best player, but has started to turn it on. And his free kicks are magnificent. I think we're just going to see more and more and more set pieces from him and more worldies. And you're going to get games where he doesn't turn it on, but that's the case for everybody. I think that when he does, though, he is an absolute star, and I think he's going to get known for some of his set pieces. Okay, he's not David Beckham, but he's a League Two David Beckham.
Again, I mean, I'll take Nightingale all the time. And actually, to be honest with you, I think when Nightingale's been on form, he's been irresistible sometimes, and not just as at the back, but going forwards. I think there was a period of time, and I'm losing track of time, whether it was the start of this season or last season, he was just scoring. He was scoring every game at home. It was last season, wasn't it? So he was, yeah. I mean, and then he got injured, which was you know, downer. And so I think if he gets fit, gets back to his best, we don't miss Tyler as much, because I think him and PK can be a really good partnership. I think that would be fine. But if everything Nightingale's done for the club, I think brilliant. The player I would put in, just for almost a similar vein to Rodoni, would be Asal. Just because I think he probably, in theory, he should be the player that goes on and has the best career. I don't think he endears himself to the fans for whatever reason. He hasn't got that sort of connection. I guess he just looks a bit moody. But I think you'd argue about him. He's probably been he's our best player, and he's you know, in the 20 best players that were in the AFL recently, under 21. So he's, and you forget how young he is still. He's a phenomenal talent.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, it's loads of good. I mean, I wouldn't disagree with everything that everyone said generally. Obviously, I don't know. Why is Kevin St. Luce not included? I don't know. He was definitely on my list. So there's that. I totally agree with Nightingale.
You had to come up with someone even more hat stand than Nestegan's Walker, right?
Oh, come on. Like,
I really don't know what's wrong with you. There's something there in your...
Honestly, I thought he was great. 46 appearances, like, brilliant. Anyway, I looked up. Obviously, Nightingale, like, that's a given. Like, for, you know, like, that's a given. Like, he has to be included no matter what. That is totally. And like Matthew said, like, some of his performances have been so solid. Like, it's just ridiculous. Obviously, Nestor Guinness-Walker should be in there for lots of reasons. I guess, I mean, maybe the last one I've thrown is Woodyard, probably. But I don't know if that was on the original list. I can't remember. But, yeah, again, I think Woodyard, you know, just again, nice, seems like a really nice guy, solid, etc. You know, so I don't know which decade that falls into. So I got loads of others. I've got Mabude, I've got Ruse, I've got loads.
Look, I think there's a solid nine that we can agree on, and the 10th one you could throw around forever. So let's not do that.
The 10th one's Nesta Guinness-Walker, yeah? We agreed that, yeah? Yeah, we just agreed that. I heard that. Then the internet must have gone wrong there.
Not Nesta Guinness-Walker, no.
No. I like the fact you put this out to Adam, who then not only selects Nesta Guinness-Walker, I mean, yeah, but then adds in a player who wasn't even on the list.
Well, we'll wrap it up there. Otherwise, Adam will just come up with the most obscure, random people who made one substitute appearance.
We're
forgotten about. And another pod will come up with the best Loney 11 ever, because we probably had that.
Adam's best 11. Adam's best 11 ever. I think we should have that.
No, that would get zero listens. We are not doing that.
Moving us on and closing it down with some numbers for the week. Only three to go this week. Kicking off quickly with... Adam's number is 105,000. This is more to do with football. This is not really to do with the AFC London, because unfortunately we didn't qualify for this.
Yeah. Oh, is it FA Cup money for the next round or something?
Yes, it is. The winning prize money for the winners of the FA Cup third round.
Yes, I actually got something right.
But
oh my word! Okay. Episode 20 took me 20 episodes, but I got something right, for goodness sake.
Well done, Adam. But here's the worst thing. How much do you think the winners of the third round of the FA Cup for the women? Congratulations to AFC Women's Women, who beat Gillingham yesterday. How much do you think those sides earn?
I bet it's peanuts. It's going to be something stupid like...
200,000? Is it more? It's much more, isn't it, than the men?
No, it's not.
$2,000? It's going to be something... Five?
10 grand?
28,000.
That's still ridiculous compared.
That is still ridiculous, yeah. Okay, for Mr. Matthew Cooper, Matthew Cooper's number is 532.
Is that our average away attendance?
Yes, it is. Had to be nice to you this week, Matt.
I looked at all the numbers.
Yeah, well, actually, it's the average... It's the thing I sent you, but also recalculated, including the 206 that went to crew.
Yeah, so. I knew you were trying to fool me, but yeah, I got there.
We try. All right, very, very quickly, finishing off then for Alex. Alex's number is 7.
Well, there's no pressure on me now, is there?
Well, because they both got it.
Because they both got it right. Is that the average franchise away
support? I think you've overestimated.
No, but franchise do feature in this.
Oh, no, it's not the number of concrete cows, is it?
Number of flares thrown on the pitch. I don't know. I've got no idea for 7, no.
Okay, so we've just given our away attendance at 532. And there are 7 League One clubs who have an average attendance of fewer than 532. And you'd like to try and guess who any of them might be?
What, franchise?
Franchise is one, yes.
Morecambe, Accrington, Stanley.
Yes. Accrington, yes.
Lincoln?
Nope.
Nah, no idea.
Forest Green?
Forest Green, correct. He's doing well here. 2 more. Oh, 3 more.
Shrewsbury, maybe?
Nope.
I can't even think of anything.
Put us out of our misery.
Fleetwood, Burton, yeah. Albion, and Cheltenham. Town. That's pretty good, though. Pretty good, pretty good. Pretty good, pretty sensible. Well done, gentlemen. Much more succinct podcast without that Niall Cooper bloke.
He won't even listen to this episode. That's the thing. He won't even listen to it.
More fool him. More fool him. Hopefully he'll be back next week. Thank you to Niall. No. Thank you to Niall for not being here. Thank you to Matt. Thank you to Adam. Thank you to Alex. Thank you to you all for listening. That's been episode 20 of the Same Old Wombles. Find us on Spotify and Twitter and anywhere else you can find your general podcast to download. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you same time next week. Cheers.